Country Life on Midlands 103. Brought to you by W. Orshaw, Burlington Business Park, Tullamore. Supplier of New Holland tractors in the Midlands. WORshaw.ie.
Now, good evening and welcome to Country Life here on Midlands 103. It's MJ Cleary with you for the next hour, bringing you the latest from the Midlands and further afield from the worlds of agriculture, food and agribusiness. Thank you all for joining me this evening and welcome to the programme. A great week since I was speaking to you all last with some super drying. And yes, on the 8th of February, plenty of cows out grazing, which I've seen over the last couple of days. It's a lovely sight to see indeed. How long will it last? Who knows? But look, we'll take it as it comes. On to this evening's programme, and iPad have just launched their annual land report, and it makes for some very interesting reading. With prices in areas hitting record highs of €25,000 per acre, the average price of farmland has increased to over €12,000 per acre. And the report goes into detail on land leasing also, which is now showing that €500 per acre is freely available. David MacDonald from Property Partners Mullingar will join me later to go through the report, and I will ask him if he feels leasing prices will increase this coming year. The use of glyphosate is in the headlines regularly, and its use is currently on a one-year extension from the EU. A recent study carried out by NUI Galway shows that glyphosate was detected in 26% of Irish people sampled. What does this mean from a health perspective, and are glyphosate's days numbered? Dr. Marie Coggins from NUI Galway will join me later to chat on this very interesting area of research. Now, Laois IFA are having their AGM tomorrow evening, and Minister McConlogh is joining the event. Their county chair, John Fitzpatrick, will join me later to chat about this meeting and how he's finding organic dairying, which he converted to a little over 2 years ago. When speaking about Laois IFA, I will take this time to offer condolences to the family of former IFA president and leashman Pádraig Walsh, who died suddenly last week. A fantastic career in agriculture. We'll be having a word about it with John a little bit later in the programme. And I'll take this opportunity to say may he rest in peace, and our condolences and wishes go to his family at this tough time. Now, starting this evening's programme, I'm going to move on to the area of organic farming. And I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Joe Kelleher from Chagas. Joe, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
No better, MJ.
Joe, you have a series of webinars taking place over the course of the next few months. The first one's actually on this evening at 7:30. Then you have one first week of March and another one first week of April. Obviously, loads of interest in organics at the moment. And just speaking about it, there was a big push towards the back end of the year. The funding was increased. What sort of numbers are we talking about, Joe, who went for the organics? I know we don't definitively know if they've got in yet, but it's looking pretty good. But was there big interest in it?
Yeah, there was huge interest in it. We had up to the tranche opening last autumn, we had about 2,000 organic farmers in the country, and we doubled that by the time the tranche closed on the 9th of December. So we've just over 4,000, almost 4,100 organic farmers in the country. So the target for 2027 was 7.5% of the land area in Ireland to be farmed organically. So we're now at about 4.5%. So we're making good strides towards hitting that target.
And those extra 2,000 then, Joe, are they insured of government funding on it? Is that known yet?
It's not known. The department has said they'll be issuing them with letters hopefully in the next week or two. What's expected is that everyone that meets the basic eligibility criteria will be accepted in. So the basic eligibility criteria is that you submit a valid basic payment form, that you have the minimum hectares required, which for grassland farmers is 3 hectares, and that you have a valid license, an organic license with one of the organic certification bodies. So if you meet the basic eligibility criteria, you're pretty much guaranteed to be accepted.
And I suppose, Joe, the easy part is filling out the form or getting your advisor to fill it out and clicking the few buttons. But then the more challenging part starts when you're actually in conversion or you're becoming an organic farmer. Maybe you scratch your head and say, right, I'm used to going out now and spreading a couple of bags of fertiliser here to get the place to green up and to get some grass to grow. But I don't have that option now. So there is a bit of a dearth of knowledge, if you will, in relation to it. And obviously that's why you're holding these webinars. What do you find from customers or clients yourself, Joe, when they're talking about organics in relation to it? Do they have much knowledge, or is there a lot of education that needs to be put out there?
Yeah, there is a lot of education, I suppose, is the short answer. Like, there's 2,000 farmers that are in organics for a while, so they're well versed on the what to do and what not to do in organics. But there's 2,000 new farmers now in the scheme, and there's a lot of them are hungry for knowledge, is what I would say. So we're there's a number of things happening. We have the three webinars that you mentioned there as well, starting tonight. But next week we're starting a series of 25-hour organic farming principles courses across the country, and there's plenty of spaces available on those courses actually. So if anyone wants to brush up, but if you're an existing organic farmer and you're one of the 2,000 new people, you have to complete this course by October. Or if you're someone that's thinking maybe I might join organics in the autumn, well, then it's a great way of actually getting versed on what's the do's and don'ts of organics, really.
Yeah, and they're available on the NOTS website, I believe, Joe.
That's the NOTS are doing a series of them as well. NOTS have about 15 courses planned around the country in various locations. So they're in-person courses, and they're typically on a Friday and Saturday. And our courses then are run via Zoom for the main part, and they're on weekdays. Most people find there's one course that suits them. You know, for people that are working in the middle of the day, the NOTS course might be more appropriate, and then people that are full-time farming, maybe the Chagas online one might be more appropriate. So it's up to everyone to figure out which one. For the Chagas one, if you just put Chagas organic training into your search engine, it'll take you to where you can register. And for the NOTS one, just NOTS.ie will take you to their website.
Yeah, very good. Lots of options there for people. Now, just a word on the webinars, Joe. As you said, one on this evening. What's the webinar on this evening about? And can you tell us just about the other two as well, please?
Yeah, the one this evening is about converting beef housing. It's one of the biggest volume of queries we get over the phone is people just want to know what do they have to do to convert their housing to make it compliant with the organic standards. So we have two farmers on this evening, Fergus Handy from Limerick and Tig and Clare Hapton from Clare, and we've videos done on their farms of Tig and Clare have just gone into the scheme, and we're going to show what they have to do in terms of converting their housing. And then Fergus is in organics for nearly 10 years, so he's kind of the after of what he did to convert his housing. So it should be a nice visual example for people to follow. The webinar that's on next month then is focusing on feeding the ewe pre and post lambing, because we've a large number of sheep farmers after going into the scheme the last time it opened, and we're getting a lot of queries there about feeding the ewe for that 2 or 3 weeks pre-lambing and the 2 or 3 weeks post-lambing. So we're going to focus on that for the webinar at the start of March. And then at the start of April, we're doing a bit on red clover silage. It's a fantastic crop. It fixes up to 300 kilos of nitrogen. It's a high quality feed, high protein, so it replaces your chemical nitrogen, replaces the imported soya hopefully as well that's coming into the country. So it's doing a number of things, and it's a crop that we'd like to see more grown of on organic and conventional farmers across the country. So that's what the April webinar will focus on.
Yeah, the April one's very interesting, Joe. I might have you back for a word on that in a couple of months' time. We'll let you go because I know you're speaking at 7:30. If people are interested in logging on to those, it is Chagas Organic Webinars in the search engine, and it should pop up. And thanks for joining me this evening, Joe.
Thanks, MJ.
Joe Kelleher there from Chagas. And there is lots of info out there now in relation to the organic scheme and organic course. And as Joe said, got into over 4,000 farmers now, 4.5%. So it's growing and growing. And those webinars are available. They're recorded as well. So if you pop them in at any stage, you'll be able to see them. Chagas Organic Webinars. One on this evening at 7:30, and then one next month and the following month. That area of red clover silage is the real growth area, pardon the pun. It's the one that people are talking about because, as we know in organics, look, growing silage is the issue, really. Having enough silage for a reasonable stocking rate and doing it without fertiliser is where the problems arise. So the red clover seems to be what is being mooted as the solution. Now, I am coming up to an ad break. Before I go to an ad break, I must tell you about a TV programme I started watching a couple of weeks back, and I'm a bit late to the party on this. I think people are aware of it, but it is called Yellowstone, and it's all about a ranch in Montana. Kevin Costner is the lead in it, and it's about, I think it's the largest ranch in the USA, and it's about a family, and it's running it, and all the trials and tribulations in relation to it. They have a couple of thousand head of cattle. They look to be a purebred Angus animal. They do all their work on horseback, and it really is a hugely interesting program from a farming perspective, just looking at the scale and the logistics of farming on such a huge scale. A really, really good program, and I believe it's on RT. I'm watching it online. But it's called Yellowstone, and I have to give it a big thumbs up. If you get a few minutes, or you have a little
now, we're
bit
moving
spare
on time
to land
break,
and land value, really, and we have no better man other than David MacDonald from Property Partners in Mullingar. David, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Good evening, MJ. Good to talk to you again.
More than welcome, David. Look, we're speaking about the recent IPAV report on property values. But before we get into that, just to refresh our memories, David, you spoke to us on the programme previously, but a little about your own business and background, if you will.
Yeah, we're property partners at McDonald's and we're based in Mullingar here. And look, we've been in business for over 50 years. The business was started by my dad, Jimmy, who's still involved with the business, glad to say. And look, we have a broad spectrum of activity in the industry, from agricultural land leasing sales to residential and commercial lettings and sales. So it's we've enough to keep us busy.
Yeah, broad spectrum, as you say. Diversity is the key to success in all business, David, no more than the property game. And I'm looking at your report, very comprehensive report, which you release every year around this time, and it goes and shows all the price differentials. And just looking at a couple of the headlines, I suppose, some areas achieving €25,000 per acre for farmland, some are down as low as 7. But the interesting one is the average. The average price at the time of the report was €12,231 per acre, so just over 12,000. But the really interesting element here, I think, is the fact that in 2016, which really is not that long ago, the average price was €8,750. And by my maths, that is a 39% increase in a little over 6 years. That's a huge, huge, huge increase.
It is. No, it's it's testament to what's happening in the industry. Probably one of the biggest drivers there is the dairy industry. And we've all seen any farmers who want to stay actively in the agriculture industry, they have to chase where the returns are. And for the last number of years, the returns have been in the dairy industry, and that has required either guys who were had smaller holdings to raise the size of their herds, which meant they had to have extra land to do so, and their choices were either to lease land or to buy it. And that's what's happening right through the land market at the moment. It's predominantly being driven by farmers who are upsizing, and they need land to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, David, it's indicative of the growth of the machine, if you will, the monster that is Irish dairying. It's going one direction, and land is the only thing that can help it keep growing, as you say. And therefore, the demand is what it is. If we look at the Midlands, for example, David, in around Leash Offaly and Westmead, what are we talking about? If we're talking on land prices, average prices in this neck of the woods, whereabouts are we in relation to the national average?
For Westmead, that general Westmead Offaly area, we're about 11,500 per acre on an average. Now, look, that's an average. Obviously, we've all heard of the headline figures, which of land making over 20,000 an acre. And having said that, there is more marginal land that will make the more what people are used to seeing, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 an acre. So those sales are taking place. And I suppose not everyone has the top quality land that reached the headline prices.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just see in some of the figures in relation to Westmeath here on your report, I say in around that 11,500 per acre. But if we look at the people who are purchasing, and it's unsurprising, I suppose, given the fact that land has increased, as we said, 39% in those last 6 years. Investors made up 46% of all buyers. Dairy farmers made up 18%. Followed by beef farmers on 17. There must be some wealthy beef farmers in Westmead, David. I'm liking to see that. I didn't think the figure would be that high. But the investors at 46% is an interesting one. It's a no-brainer, really, for people with a lot of money at the moment. Farmland, Irish farmland, I'm sure if you put it on a trajectory over the course of the last 30, 40 years, can't imagine it's dipped much. But in the last few years, it really is. It's money in the bank, and it's growing year on year.
Yeah, it's seen as a safe haven for your savings. One factor there that is very relevant, it is a tax efficient way of moving wealth and money on to the next generation as well, because if the person inheriting the land is qualifies for agricultural relief, there are significant tax advantages there for capital acquisitions tax. your thresholds are more or less they're multiplied tenfold.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely it is a real and salient way of moving wealth. There's no question about it. If we're talking about the land leasing side of things, then David, this is what a lot of farmers are interested in. Look, in reality, not too many farmers want to sell their land. However, they do want to generate income from it. Maybe people are looking at retirement, or smaller beef farmers are kind of just saying, look, I've 30, 40, 50 acres here. I'm making little or nothing on it by farming it. However, here's this alternative I have now of leasing it at proper money, tax-free if we fall within certain thresholds. I'm presuming your phone is ringing regularly, both from dairy farmers looking to lease land and then from smaller farmers looking to put it on the market?
That's right. From the land letting point of view, you're correct there in that the revenue rules stipulate that anyone who rents land for 5 years or more, that there is no tax on that rental income. That's a benefit for the renter as well, in that they can plan ahead for those 5 or 6 years or whatever the length of their lease is, and more so than they can plan ahead on the usual 11-month lease. It allows them to increase the fertility of the land and make it more productive. And obviously, if they are entering any of the government schemes, they have to. The typical length of those schemes is a 5-year run. So there is certainly more interest in the longer lease.
And the €500 per acre that we're talking about now, Commonfold, even this time last year, we were a long way off that. Land prices were, well, back way closer, $350 maybe was a strong price. Suddenly this price has just popped up and now people are talking about it regularly. I know it is being paid. We've had auctioneers on the programme here speaking about it. It is a huge amount of money per year for an acre of land. Is it freely available in the Midlands, David, €500 per acre?
To be honest, it's not the norm. There are several reports of rents in that 400 to 500 an acre. It tends to be in areas that there's competition for the land. Maybe the land, certainly, we go back to the farmers that have that money to spend and maybe are making money in the enterprise that allows them to spend that money. And that typically is in the dairy sector. They're under severe pressure on, you know, herd size requirements and nitrates limitations, where really to comply with the nitrates derogation, they need more land to spread those nitrates across, as in have more land to spread your slurry across and comply with those. I think it's 250 kilos of nitrogen per hectare is the upper limit. Yeah. So it has to be. That's the only way. The only route they have is to rent land, and obviously the land that's nearest to them is the more efficient to farm. And if they have to pay a bit more for it, some of them are prepared to do it, and they get into a bidding war, and that's where you get the headline of 450, 500 euros an acre. But look, you have to be realistic about it as well. There's a huge proportion of land is being rented at that 250 to 350 euros an acre as well. It's not everyone can afford or to make money out of, you know, rents of the upper levels that we've seen in the headlines.
Yeah, and it is important to get a realistic picture of it as well, because as you say, those headline amounts, they do grab attention. But look, it's not the complete norm, as you say. It's in specific areas. David, I'm going to say many thanks for joining me here on the programme. Great rundown there on all the different areas. Your report is available online. It's the IPAV Farming Report, January 2023. It's available for free. A lot of work put into it, and you've put there's some serious detail in it. It's well worth a little flick through by anyone involved in agriculture. And I'm going to say many thanks for coming on and joining us this evening, David.
You're welcome, MJ. No problem.
Dave MacDonald, your property partners in Mullingar. And as I said, that report is available online. A huge amount of info in it in all the different areas. I just have it in front of me here and I'm flicking down through it. There's a great little piece at the start of it from Pat Davitt in relation to all the different areas of agriculture, and he gives his own comments on things that, for example, the government is finalising TAMS in relation to solar PV, and he's talking about the amount of money you can write off against your tax and what you can do if you're registered for VAT. Load of info here in it, and a really, really good piece of work, I have to say. It goes down through dairy, beef, tillage, sheep, all the different areas, all the different parts of Ireland. And yeah, very interesting to flick through it and just see what your land is potentially worth and what you could potentially get from it from a leasing perspective. And as we just said, we're with David, he did water down, I suppose, a little bit this figure. We see it the whole time now, 500 per acre, and it's not always that, and it is important to be aware of that as well. That is the exception, really, as opposed to the norm, depending on where you're located and depending who your neighbours are, because really, like everything you're selling, it's worth as much as somebody is willing to pay for it. It's not always the way. Now, just before I go, I just see the Farming Independence headline yesterday. Interesting, I think, and it is definitively an issue for a lot of you out there. Older farmers shut out as services move further online. So over 42,000 farmers are now over the age of 65, and a lot are not computer literate. It is becoming more challenging to operate your farm on a daily basis with the amount of things that are going online, from registering calves, from looking up your stock numbers, looking up your nitrates, all of these things online. And it is something which is a real challenge for older farmers. And that is a very interesting stat, isn't it? 42,000 farmers now over the age of 65, definitively. In agriculture, older demographic, no question about it. Now, we're moving on to a survey which was conducted by NUI Galway, and I have Dr. Marie Coggins on the line. Marie, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Thank you for having me, MJ.
You're more than welcome, Marie. Very interesting piece. This came across in the Farmers Journal last week, and it's about a study which you did a couple of years back. We will speak about it in just a moment, but before we do that, a little bit of your own background, Marie. What area of the college do you work in, and what's your research areas?
So my I'm based in the School of Natural Sciences at the University of Galway, where I teach a module called Exposure Science on our undergraduate degree in environmental health and safety, and we also have some postgraduate programs in occupational environmental health and safety there as well.
Very good. Yeah, very interesting area, no doubt. And obviously this area of glyphosate is the one that most people are knowledgeable of, I suppose. It's probably the biggest chemical in the world, and everyone's aware of it. And this is a study you did back a couple of years ago. Can you just give us a little bit of background on it? How many people did you do? What were you looking to obtain? And how did you get on?
Yeah, so the project was completed over the period 2019 to 21. So not that far back at all, actually. And the objective then was to look at general population exposure in Ireland to glyphosate. And glyphosate is the active ingredient. It's a herbicide, but it's the active ingredient in many herbicides that we commonly found on the market here that would be marketed as Roundup. And we recruited 67 families to participate in the study. As I said, the objective really was to look at the general population exposure. So the father, mother and child of that family were requested to give a sample of urine, the first morning void, which was analysed for glyphosate, but also its breakdown product, AMPA. Of the 67 families, 14 of those families were farm families, so just a small number of farm families participated in the study. And the farm family, the dad in that family, was using glyphosate on the day before the sample was taken and analysed.
And was that for every family?
No, so just so for the other families, they would not have been using pesticide products at all.
Okay.
But for the farm family, I suppose what we were interested in looking at was the background concentration, exposure concentration in, say, farmers or occupational users of the pesticide slightly higher than, say, the other families who didn't have any, I suppose, occupational or known use of the pesticide.
And is it known what that man was doing? Was he using a knapsack? Was he out spraying a field? Was he spraying a garden? Or maybe that info wasn't...
That info wasn't really collected. But it was used for on their garden. So there was or on their farm. So there was, I suppose, a range of different farm types that were included, not just tillage farmers, but other type of farmers that would have been using the pesticide on their farm itself, or maybe for weed control around their house and gardens.
And the results then that you got back, what came back when you collated the data?
Yeah, so I suppose we did detect glyphosate in just a quarter of samples at very low levels. So you probably know in Europe we have something called an acceptable daily intake value that's set by EFSA, that's the European Food Safety Authority. So the concentrations that we detected were less than 3% of that value. Now, there was no significant difference statistically between the concentrations we found in farm families and non-farm families, but remember that we only had 14 farm families participating, so I wouldn't home in on that statistic too much. We did, however, find the higher levels, even though the levels overall were quite low, the higher levels were detected in the farmers, and they obviously were the people that were using glyphosate during the study. So in terms of AMPA, the detection rate for AMPA was a lot higher, actually. Three quarters of the samples had detectable levels of AMPA. But again, the concentrations were quite low and lower than this acceptable daily intake value.
And is, asking an uneducated question in relation to chemicals, is the AMPA considered to be worse for you than the glyphosate, or is it the same, or is it not as bad, or what's the thought process on it?
Well, AMPA is considered by many to be the breakdown product of glyphosate in the environment. However, there are other sources of AMPA other than glyphosate. So, for example, it can be found in detergents and other chemicals as well, break down into AMPA. So for that reason, EFSA has set a separate exposure limit value for it and glyphosate. However, there are calls from the scientific community to look at this and consider having an overall limit that would consider, I suppose, the cumulative exposure from both chemicals. So at the moment, the acceptable daily intake value that's set for both chemicals is the same. Numerically, it's the same number.
I'm presuming, Marie, that in an ideal world, it would be better if there was no chemical detected in a person's system, in an ideal world. However, we don't live in an ideal world. We live in a world where, you know, people buy in supermarkets and buy a lot of, you know, foods that would have these herbicides and pesticides sprayed in them and whatnot, and it gets into the food chain. But these figures we're looking at, maybe for adults, you know, you can probably maybe handle a little bit, but for smaller children, should we be conscious of this a little bit, as in not ideal for babies to be ingesting this into their system, I'm guessing?
Yeah, so I suppose you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, remember, these chemicals are they're not natural chemicals that we would find in our bodies, so they're not naturally present in the body. So they're here because of an exposure that we've had. And this is just one chemical. So, I mean, we could list off up to 10 or 20 chemicals that if we went looking for in either blood or urine in the morning, we would find it in both adults and kids. So I suppose the concern, I suppose, is that, you know, it's not just one chemical, it's the combination of all these exposures from different chemicals and what the impact that has on our health. That's the worry. So I suppose, while individually chemicals might be less than exposure limit, it's the cumulative effect of all these exposures. That's something we don't really know too much about. And that's an area of research that's kind of ongoing. But I suppose it's not really acceptable that we should be getting exposed to these chemicals, especially children and young. Like some of the children that participated in our studies were as low as 3, 3 to 19 years of age. So it's not really acceptable, I suppose, that, you know, we are detecting this chemical or any other chemical, I suppose, in our bodies and we haven't been using it. So we're detecting it either through our diet or through having been exposed in some other way.
Yeah, and you mentioned there, Marie, as well, about the amount of other chemicals that there are and could be detected in people. Does glyphosate get a bit of a bad rep, I wonder, if there's all these other chemicals that are out there as well we don't even know the name of? I know there was big court cases in relation to this. There's probably as many that are just as bad, if not as bad. I don't expect you to say yes or no to me on that, but I'm guessing there is a multitude out there. In your studies, you're probably seeing tons and tons of stuff coming up, as you say, in people's blood and urine.
Yeah, so I suppose glyphosate has been around, it has been in the media and it has received a lot of media attention, and so that's why it's kind of top of everyone's list. And it has been around since the 1970s, so it's around a long time. But I suppose it's fair to say that pesticides, because they do enter the food chain, they're probably one of the most tested chemicals that we have. As we live in a chemical society, become so I suppose, reliant on chemicals for so many different things. And sometimes, I suppose, the edge between safe and unsafe use gets blurred because it becomes so familiar with stuff. But I suppose we do need to step back from now and then, from time to time, and just remember that, you know, these are chemicals and we should be using them in a safe way.
Yeah, absolutely. Hugely interesting study, Maria, I have to say. Really, really, really interesting and great food for thought for people. I'm going to say many thanks for joining me on the programme, and I'd look forward to speaking to you again at some stage, maybe when you do another survey on something agri-related, Maria.
Yeah, certainly. Thanks, MJ. Bye-bye.
Dr. Maria Coggins there from NUI Galway. And yeah, as I said, hugely interesting piece of research there in relation to chemicals ingested by individuals. And really, I suppose Maria hit it on the head, hit the nail on the head there. Like, it's not ideal. You want to try and keep this to a minimum. Look, within reason, it depends on lifestyle, it depends on your diet, it depends on what you're exposing yourself to. And each individual will kind of make their own choices. But I suppose, as Dr. Coggins said there, exposure to young children really is probably what you want to be trying to limit to the best of your ability. They're just, you know, immune systems aren't going to be built up the same way as an adult, and it is going to affect them more. And I suppose if we take that from it, that would be a good lesson. And look, glyphosate, as we said, it's on a year long kind of license now. It's on its, maybe its last leg, some people think, from the EU this year. And going forward, obviously will make agriculture a lot difficult, will make commercial agriculture a lot difficult. It's been around since the 70s. It's the go-to product for farmers in relation to reseeding, in relation to multitude of tillage operations. But getting into the food chain then is where, as we say, the lines get a bit blurred and not ideal. So really interesting study there, I have to say, from NUI Galway. And I am going to go to a break, but just before the break, I have some headlines here from the Farmers Journal. Let me pop into them for a second and we'll see what is on the front page tomorrow. And it's leading with ferocious appetite for weanlings as price continues to soar. Very odd time of the year for weanlings in February. And we keep talking about the weanling trade. It's usually the back end of the year, but obviously it's shown that the trade is so hot at the moment that 2022 born calves are going up onto €3 a kilo. €3.53 a kilo an animal hit this week. €3.80 a kilo weanling was €1,341. Wow. That is an incredible price for a 2022 animal. Great weight, actually, as well. If you're talking, I suppose, 1 year old and you're in that 400 kilo bracket. But the appetite is ferocious, said the general manager of Arrivo Marts up in Connacht. There's a ferocious appetite for weanlings out there at the moment, with the high end of the market being driven by feedlot finishers. We thought the trade peaked at €3 a kilo, but we feel it is heading for €4 a kilo now for that lighter animal, that store weanling of, say, 300 to 400 kilos. So huge, huge money being paid for those at the moment. New TAMS list provokes slurry controversy is another one. A controversial decision to disallow grant aid on dribble bar slurry equipment in favour of grant aiding trailing shoe technology is causing consternation among farmers. And also, farmers' contribution to GDP continues to grow. So Ireland's gross domestic product estimate for the last 3 months of 2022 showed a growth of over 10%, and agriculture is playing a huge part in that. So lots on offer in tomorrow's Farmers Journal, a tidbit there for you. And you're very welcome back to the last section of this evening's programme, and we're moving on to Laois IFA with John Fitzpatrick on the line. John, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Good evening, MJ.
John, your AGM tomorrow, but first, I mentioned it at the start of the programme, and it's a start on a sad note. A colleague of yours, the sad passing of Pádraig Walsh, with a great career in agriculture and a great Laois man, this time last week. John, I'm just going to give you a moment to say a word on it, please.
Yeah, well, look, MJ, Pádraig is a man I know for years and years, and his wife is actually a neighbour of mine. And on behalf of Laois IFA, I'd like to express our sincere condolences to Ella, Catherine, Julianne and Pat, all his family. It was a huge shock to every one of us when we heard it. We weren't expecting it. Pádraig was as large as life in every sense of the word, and you'd meet him a good bit here and there at different meetings and so on. But just the testament of the man, like, he had huge and tremendous skills in lots of different fields, and especially in the farming. At an early stage, he won Creamery Milk Supplier of the Year, and that showed his farming ability. But I think his main strength was in farming politics. He really understood farming politics so well, and he was a very able negotiator on farming issues. And like, even he started off with Mockra with his local branch and the leash. Then he went on to farming with the dairy chairman. He was national treasurer of IFA, national president. You know, he had so many roles, and he was actually the first leash Irish person to head up the European lobby group Copa Cajica, and he was the first president of from Ireland of that. And even up to the time of his untimely death, he was chairman of the Farm Business Development. So, you know, he was over an awful lot of influential roles and was thought very highly of. And he even seen myself that he was a go-to person. Like, if you were stuck with an issue or maybe you wanted a contact for some reason, he'd always have it. And he'd give you a huge amount of his own personal time and information, you know. So, you know, there's not many people with his ability around, and he certainly was a very able person.
Yeah, absolutely, John. A great tribute there, I have to say. And as you said, an incredible career from the ground the whole way up. And the thing I took from that, interviewed Paul a couple of times here on the programme. I didn't know the man, Lord mercy on him, but did interview him on a couple of occasions. As you say, that ability to negotiate and that ability to read politics and to understand it and to be able to move through it, because it's murky waters at times. It's a real skill.
It is, and he was as well known in Brussels as he was in Ireland. He had all the contacts.
Yeah, a testament to him. And may, as we said, may rest in peace. But he would want things to go on as well. And the Laois IFA AGM is tomorrow evening. And Páraí would be very proud that you have the Minister for Agriculture down to it. And it is a big event, John. You have Minister McConlough coming down to it. Can you tell us what's in store for people should they attend tomorrow
evening? Well, basically speaking, we are delighted to have him coming down. I was at a meeting with him before Christmas, and I publicly asked him would he come down. And the main reason I'm getting him down is to speak with the grassroots members of the organisation. And, you know, we are delighted to have him coming. It's tomorrow night in the Abilene Manor Hotel at 8 o'clock. And I'll encourage all members of Laois IFA to attend and to give people an opportunity to listen to and to ask questions of the minister. He'll be there in person. So, you know, it's not often we get him down this locally. And there's a huge opportunity for people to ask the man himself the questions. And I would encourage everybody to be there on time. He's running on a tight schedule, so we'll have him on first. The meeting will be starting on time, and the minister will be on first.
So it is, John, a great opportunity, as you say, to get questions to the main man himself. I often get asked by listeners here, why don't I say this and why don't I say that when I'm on? I get to speak to him maybe once a year, maybe twice a year, depending on at the ploughing and maybe another event. The 25 or 30 minutes goes very quick with a professional talker at that. So it's obviously hard to get a word in. So I'll encourage people as well to attend. And if you do have a burning issue, don't be afraid to put your hand up and just to ask it, because at the end of the day, he's in that role. It's his job to talk to farmers. And I think it's a great job and a great coup, John, to get him down for the night. And I'd say you'll have a huge turnout tomorrow.
Absolutely. You know, you can't get any higher than himself. That's the person who has the questions. Of all questions and everything, there'll be documented and they'll be followed up on.
Yeah, 100%. And John, just before I let you go, I want to have a quick word with you about your own enterprise. We're speaking about organic farming here on the programme. There's webinars on over the course of the next few weeks. We had Joe Kelleher from Chagas. We see numbers have gone from 2,000 to 4,000. Now, you're one of the old school 2,000. You're organic farming for a long time in County Laois, but you made a change about a year and a half, 2 years ago. John, can you just tell listeners what your enterprise is now and what you moved from?
Okay, well, I'm organic since 2005. I was doing sucklers up to last May, 12 months, and I changed to organic dairying then at that stage. I suppose organic dairying was something I always wanted to do and always had an interest in it. So I suppose it's different. Organic has changed a little bit since I started it. Back then, say, for example, I had to be in an environmental scheme to go organic, which meant the organic was a supplementary measure of reps at the time.
Hmm.
And now it has done a complete U-turn that I am very much prohibited against joining environmental schemes because of dual funding.
Hmm.
So that has done a complete U-turn. And also, the organic is more directed now at, I suppose, less productive areas, maybe less productive type of farming. If you're a kind of a productive farmer, and because of the high input costs and the not so great product prices, the same, I suppose, profit is not there as it was.
Yes.
It's more inclined with government area. Now the government are trying to get land area up, and some of it is directed towards that people, the lower stocking rate, so as to bring in the higher area.
And how are you finding the conversion, John, from a cash flow perspective or from a profit perspective? Presumably you're making more money at it, but I know the organic dairy farmer is complaining. Milk price not great. I don't even know, are you getting as much as conventional dairy at the moment?
At the moment for the winter milk we probably are. Summer milk we would be behind the conventional price.
Hmm.
But the real sting in the tail would be the price of meal. You know, the price of meal is, in some cases, double what the conventional is.
Any reason for that, John, why organic milk is less than conventional during it? Like, it is more expensive in shops. So what is the thought process, or what's the reason? Or maybe you don't know.
We're asking the questions, but we're not getting answers that make sense. And I don't know what it is, whether it's lack of competition for processors or what. But I don't know what the real reason is. It shouldn't be like that.
No.
It's actually frustrating at times.
I can only imagine so, John, because not easy. Look, farming in general, not easy. Organic farming is tougher again, especially when you're trying to do it to a level of scale and you're trying to grow grass without chemical fertilisers. Then to not be given a reward at the end of it is, as you say, frustrating, and look, it's a head scratcher at that. John, I could stay talking to you about all these issues for the evening, but unfortunately I'm just out of time with you now, and I'm going to say to you many thanks for joining me on the programme. We must have you on again and we'll finish our chat on organics, but just give a last word on your AGM, just time, place for tomorrow evening, please.
Well, tomorrow night, the Abbleyx Manor Hotel, 8 p.m, and I encourage all leash farmers to attend.
Lovely stuff. Many thanks, John.
Thanks, MJ.
John Fitzpatrick there, Leash IFA, Minister McConnell, down at tomorrow evening, and a great opportunity to get to speak to the man himself one-on-one and put those questions to him. Now, that is it for this evening's programme, and I'd like to thank all of my listeners yourselves for joining me for the last hour, but thanks all of my guests, I should say, over the course of the last hour. And John Fitzpatrick there from Leash IFA, who joined me in their AGM, is tomorrow evening. We have Marie Coggins from NUI Galway joined me earlier on talking about glyphosate. A very interesting piece of study there, I must say. David MacDonald from Property Partners in Westmead, speaking about land prices, and we had Joe Kelleher from Chagas talking about those organic webinars that you can join on Chagas Organic Webinars. Pop that into Google and they will pop up. You can get them. Show is repeated on Sunday morning at 7 a.m. until 8 a.m. I will be back with you all this time next week, as always, on the 15th of February. The show is also available on podcasts. So wherever you get your podcasts, be it Spotify or Apple or Google Play Store, pop in MJ Splace Cleary, Clery, and we will pop up and you can listen at your convenience. Now, Joe Cooney's up next with Country Roads. I'll talk to you in a week's time. Good night and God bless.